presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Okay, so I promise you we're going to get some really serious football talk coming up a little bit later on in our program. Kirby Smart said some pretty interesting things when he spoke to the media on Tuesday that I think sets the stage for a lot of what's going to happen the rest of the way when it comes for Georgia this season. So we will get to a lot of that here coming up. Before we get to that, though, oh, yeah, and by the way, one more thing. Let me say this off the top of the program, too. Jeff Sintel yesterday on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, said something I think pretty interesting about five-star linebacker Noah Sewell. Before we're done today, I'm going to play that for you. And if you're like me and you've been kind of wondering what Georgia's chances are with a player who lives so far away, Orem, Utah, the hometown for Noah Sewell, a lot of brothers who've played college football, all of that for the most part on the West Coast. What Jeff said yesterday about Sewell in the program that you may have seen, I think is pretty interesting, so we'll catch you up on that coming up in just a little bit. Before that, though, this is just for fun. I have been thoroughly entertained this week by something that's been actually pretty busy on social media for the most part. And I talked about this briefly yesterday during our SEC through, the push by some Georgia fans to apparently checkerboard Neyland Stadium next Saturday. We've seen Tennessee fans do this before with the orange and the white. Georgia fans apparently want to do this too. The tweet that I showed you yesterday was from our buddy Sugar Ray on this, who I thought did an yeoman's effort here. I mean, Neyland Stadium completely decorated in Georgia gear, the big Dog Nation logo kind of flying high atop the stadium, the Kirby copters in the picture there, it's red and black, the checkerboard print of all the Georgia fans dressed out, completely taking over at Neyland Stadium, and that's obviously an incredible piece of, I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say, from our buddy Sugar Ray, that's artwork, but some other Georgia fans have kind of taken a logistical step to try to truly make this happen. The vision of guys like this who've said, how cool would it be when Georgia plays moribund Tennessee next Saturday if it's checkerboard red and black throughout the stadium? There are some Georgia fans in an organized fashion who are actually pushing to try to get this done. Our buddy CW on Twitter had sent this out to me where and there are a few versions of this flying around, and what C-Dub basically says is, can we get this retweeted and make it happen, maybe mention this on the broadcast? Basically, and I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but it's essentially every orange section that Tennessee's used in the past, make that red, all the white, make them black. I don't know what the exact parameters and logistics of this are, but C-Dub and a few others have kind of pushed this out there as an idea of, well, what if every section kind of does the opposite of what Tennessee's done in the past? Maybe there could be enough Georgia fans there next week to kind of make this thing look like a red and black checkerboard. Now, I don't necessarily think that's going to happen necessarily, but the degree to which Georgia fans have been talking about this and the degree to which Georgia fans seem to have a little bit of a passion about another stadium takeover next week, I do think it's kind of funny. Let me give you a few more examples of people who've weighed in on this. Dog in Houston weighed in on Twitter. I get tagged in all these tweets because I was a part of, I guess, the initial conversation. So I get tagged in these tweets. Dog in Houston says that he thinks it's totally doable for Georgia to do a checkerboard next Saturday in Neyland Stadium, to have that many fans dressed in red and black to make that pattern show up. Dog in Houston says, let's make it happen. Not everybody necessarily agrees with that, though. Andrew Ray on Twitter says that he thinks, at the most, there could be 30,000 Georgia fans there next Saturday in Neyland Stadium. But it's really that statement that kind of got my attention. I wanted to make sure we talked about this just for a moment. Do you know how many away fans, by comparison, 30,000 would be in an opposing stadium? Do you know how not real world that is compared to what most teams travel for road games now? I mean, it used to be that, you know, road travel was kind of a cool thing a lot of programs like to do. As it stands now, the away tickets are not as hot a thing for most programs as they used to be. For Georgia, that's obviously been the case the last couple of years. The almost, 50-50 split we saw at Notre Dame back in 2017, there were probably 20-something thousand Georgia fans in Baton Rouge last year. And given the fact that's, 8-hour drive to a Baton Rouge from most parts of the Atlanta area and the Athens area, that you had that many away fans in that stadium is a staggering accomplishment for a fan base. And so the idea that there might be as many as 30,000 fans wearing Georgia gear next Saturday in Neyland Stadium, even that may be a lot. But the fact that it's even been talked about as much as it is this week, I think it's one of those things where where it really speaks to the passion that Georgia fans bring to the table. Having already taken over the Vanderbilt Stadium this year, taken over the Notre Dame Stadium back in 2017, now setting their sights on taking over another stadium this upcoming Saturday. I even like this tweet from Nikki Free as well. I'll show this one to you too, because I think she kind of sums all this up pretty nicely. She says the idea of a red and black checkerboard takeover of Neyland Stadium might be highly improbable, but there's no harm in trying. And I think that Nikki's words on that were pretty good. That tweet kind of showed up in my timeline as well, because I had been kind of involved in some of these conversations. And I think it kind of touches on a theme that's been alive for us here for most of this year, which is that all of us who've been following Georgia football for a long time need to make sure that we do a good job of appreciating how special this moment is. And it's easy at times to let the angst of what the month of November is going to look like, or what the SEC championship might look like, or what the college football playoff might look like. Sometimes it's easy to let the angst of those moments creep in and rob you of the chance to appreciate the fact that, my gosh, next Saturday, Georgia's going to play a game at Tennessee. Georgia's going to be a huge favorite. I can remember when Tennessee was beating Georgia every single year. And I can remember back when Georgia first started beating Tennessee, the first time in a long time was in Athens in 2000. And fans stormed the field because it was that big of a deal, even though that Tennessee team wasn't that good. The fact that Georgia was finally beating Tennessee just seemed like a really big deal. And the fact that the Georgia fans right now are showing up and showing out in a way that makes them unique and compared to almost the complete entire rest of college football, I think is also something to kind of be appreciated right now. So ultimately, will there be a red and black checkerboard in Neyland Stadium next Saturday? I guess I probably find that to be a little bit of a stretch in the imagination to think the Dogs could really pull that off. I do think it's worth trying, I guess, and the fact that it's seemingly been as organized this week as it is, I think speaks well of Georgia fans. But either way, those of us who are lucky enough to be in Knoxville next Saturday, when we look around, we think about what a house of horrors that stadium used to be for Georgia. To see the Dogs on the field that game, now a big favorite, expected to dominate a lowly Vols team, that's worth appreciating. And the fact that there'll be so many Georgia fans gathered around them inside that stadium, no matter what the true number actually is, 20,000, 30,000, whatever ends up being, the sheer number of those fans, that's probably worth a moment of appreciation from UGA fans as well. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us here today. No matter how you get to us, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad you're with us today. We got a fun guest coming up in a moment. We're going to welcome back Mr. College Football. You see him on the SEC Network. You've read him for years and years. He's got great insight on the Georgia Bulldogs. He was in Athens for the Notre Dame game this past Saturday. We'll talk to our buddy Tony Barnhart coming up in a couple of minutes today here on Dog Nation Daily. As I said before, I do want to get into some serious football talk here for a moment, too, after kind of being a little more lighthearted off the top of the program. Let's do that as we go around the doghouse, presented today by Online Trading Academy. And I want to specifically get into, while we have a little bit of time here, three things that Kirby Smart talked about going back to Tuesday when he met with reporters. Three things that I think are pretty important in terms of what's going to happen the rest of the way for the Georgia Bulldogs. And I want to start with this. And I know we talked to Mike Griffith about this a little bit yesterday, but I want you to get a chance to hear from Kirby Smart in his own words about this. The current status of Zamir White. Because, listen, we share a lot of opinions. Sometimes we're going to be right. Sometimes we're going to be wrong. And I think one of the things that, at least thus far through four games, I've been a little bit wrong about is that Zamir White's impact on Georgia thus far hasn't quite been what maybe I thought it would have been. Now, you could say, well, B.A., he was coming off two consecutive ACL injuries. This is a crowded Georgia backfield, and there's certainly some mitigating factors that make it easier to understand why White wasn't really a part of the game plan this past Saturday and why he hasn't really sort of burst onto the scene the way that maybe some of us would have thought he would have going back to the summer when the reviews on his health and his prognosis were as positive as they were. However, on Tuesday, when Kirby Smart spoke to reporters here as a part of Around the Doghouse presented by Online Trading Academy, when Kirby Smart spoke about this on Tuesday, I do think that he gave a pretty good explanation for why it was maybe, at least for the game against the Fighting Irish, a little bit less of White than you would have expected to see. This is good stuff from Kirby Smart on Zamir. Also, it involves DeAndre Swift here as well. Take a listen to Kirby Smart.
Just didn't hit the flow of the game. We didn't get many opportunities, you know, and if number seven is running the ball like he was running the ball, it's hard to give the ball to anybody else. I mean, the guy was making people miss, running possessed, and, you know, Brian was running hard, and we want to get Zamir involved, and we need to do that. And he's growing. He's getting better. I mean, he had two of the best blitz pickups I've seen out there today that he stoned them, and he's getting better, and he's getting more confident. And I want to be able to show confidence in him and put him out there and let him go play. It just never gave the opportunity. It wasn't just Zamir. It was other guys, a lot of guys that I would have loved to have played in that game, but the opportunity never presented itself. And we still played a lot of people.
Yeah, so listen, I think that's really a pretty good explanation on the part of Kirby Smart right there, that when you got what you got from DeAndre Swift on Saturday, even though the overall stats weren't necessarily as, maybe as big as you sometimes expect for Georgia running backs, when the game mattered most in a second half that's probably a little closer than some Georgia fans would have expected, DeAndre Swift gave you something close to a hero performance. And when he's as hot as he was this past Saturday, maybe you don't want to give those carries over to someone else, even someone like Zamir White that we all really thought we would have liked to have seen more involved in the offense and probably expected to see more involved in the offense. When you got DeAndre Swift doing what he's doing on Saturday, you know, he's probably, as John Stinchcomb said this past Monday, the guy right now for the Georgia offense. And I think that the way that John said that certainly seems true. And that's probably part of the reason why we're seeing a little bit less, at least right now, of Zamir White. The other thing that Kirby Smart says there in that comment that I think is important to highlight is the fact that Georgia continues to do a pretty good job of playing a lot of players. Now, we've come to that four-week mark in college football where a lot of programs have transfer issues. We're going to talk about that again today with Tennessee, for instance. There are other places where that's kind of popped up. Georgia, for the most part, seemingly is going to avoid some of that kind of stuff because of how well Georgia does at getting guys involved and getting guys playing. Young guys in particular who expect to be, Georgia, for the most part, does a pretty good job of keeping them involved. An example of where that did not necessarily happen on Saturday, though, a young player that we maybe thought would have played, Tyreek Stevenson, instead, when it was Tyson Campbell out and then Eric Stokes goes out with an injury, the guy that actually stepped up and I think played well in that spot on Saturday was the other Tyreek McGee. And that was probably a little bit of a surprise for some UGA fans who had seemingly heard a lot of things about Stevenson to go along with DJ Daniel during the offseason, but the newcomer Daniel got the nod, and the more experienced veteran McGee was placed alongside of him once Georgia was down both of its starting cornerbacks. Well, Kirby Smart also on Tuesday talked a little bit about that thought process too, and I wanted to make sure you got a chance to hear that.
McGee practiced all week, did a really good job. Tyreek McGee's played corner in several games. You know, he played against Missouri a couple years ago. He played against Georgia Tech. He understands our overall system probably a little bit better right now. Tyreek Stevenson is extremely talented and is a really big physical matchup guy. And as he develops and works and learns the defense, he's going to be a really good player. He's close. I mean, he's one of those guys that's competing for the job. Tyreek, we felt like would understand the coverages and know it. And when we had one corner out there that had never really started already on one side, and we didn't really want to have two of them out there at the time.
Our buddy Connor Riley said something funny the other day, which I really laughed at. You know, we've heard Kirby for a while say, hey, you know, Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell are doing a great job, but DJ Daniel and Tyreek are doing a really good job too. And I think a lot of us assume that he meant Stevenson when he said that just because of the high-profile nature of Stevenson, the way that he came into Georgia. But maybe Kirby meant Tyreek McGee the entire time. Certainly, I think the veteran presence of McGee, because let's face it, when you're putting your cornerbacks to the test and against an opponent like Notre Dame, having someone who knows the system well you know, that's certainly a valuable asset, and that's what McGee proved to be for Georgia on Saturday. However, the one thing that Smart also mentions about Stevenson that can't be overlooked, one of the reasons why I believe he's going to be on the field eventually, is because of the size that he brings to the table. You can see him. He's one of the first guys that runs out on the field, kind of bursts through the sign at the beginning of the game, and you just see the size that he brings to the table as a cornerback. That is also something that Georgia really needs. This has become a matchup game. This has become a, you know, make a tackle, make a guy miss type sport. The offensive guys trying to make guys miss. Defensive backs, athletic guys on defense trying to make tackles in space. In that new breed of football, I think Tyreek Stevenson's potentially a very valuable asset. One more from Kirby Smart here on this as we go around the doghouse presented by Online Trading Academy. The issue of the havoc rate. And gosh knows we've talked about that a lot now for months. And through four games, some good, some not quite so good when it comes to the havoc rate. Here's an update from Kirby Smart on that, one-third of the way through the regular season.
we're trying to affect the passer more. Our havoc rate is right on our line of where we want to be. We've been really close every game. One game we were under, the other two or three we were over, but we're trying to find more ways. So we spent the last 2 days studying teams that are leading. What are they doing? What in the SEC is working? Who's got the highest havoc rate on SEC defenses?
So pretty good stuff there from Kirby Smart, and we'll obviously hear more of that throughout the week as he kind of sets the stage for what Georgia does next Saturday against Tennessee, and of course, we'll be following all that every step of the way. So Around the Doghouse, it's brought today by our friends at Online Trading Academy, and I say this all the time, we all want more money. That's just part of life. And the best way to get more money is make the decision to invest in yourself. Lots of investment choices, but the first step is investing yourself. That means learning how to make the markets work for you, no matter which direction they might move. That's what Online Trading Academy provides, a chance to learn across a variety of trading styles, spectrum of asset classes. Online Trading Academy provides this for you both in the classroom and online. And the best way for you to get in touch is to go to this website right here, right now, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. It's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. You can go to Online Trading Academy, and you can find out how to make them work for you and help the markets work to your advantage. It's Online Trading Academy, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. All right, we're going to hear from Jeff Sintel later on. He's going to talk about Noah Sewell from yesterday's Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. We'll have an update on a big-time five-star prospect who has also put Georgia among his list of finalists. A lot of SEC news to get to on today's program as well. But for now, let's get ready to talk to our buddy Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football from the SEC Network and so much more. Great to have you all with us here as a part of Dog Nation Daily. And as I said before, he is from the SEC Network, and you can read him at tmgcollegesports.com as well. He's a great friend of us here on Dog Nation Daily and someone who I always love talking college football with. It is Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football. Tony, welcome back to Dog Nation Daily. I hope you're doing well, and I hope that you are catching your breath here after a feverish 4 weeks of the college football season. Georgia gets to take a rest here this week. We get to watch some of the other teams play, and I'm sure you're looking forward to doing that too.
Well, Brian, the major thing about college football is that, in June and July, you never think it's going to get here. The summer just drags on and on, and then it starts, and you put your head down, and we're a third of the way through. We're headed into week five. And we're going to look up again, and it's going to be Thanksgiving. It just goes by so quickly.
It is amazing, and I think we all say that every single year. The time you wait for, and then once it starts, it's like a downhill train the entirety of the way. You were in Athens on Saturday, and Tony, I'm sure you've noticed what I've noticed, that for everyone who was there and everyone who watched the game, there's kind of two distinct groups of thought that form from this. Hey, it's great that Georgia played in a close game and found a way to win that. It proves something about itself by fighting down to the wire against the Fighting Irish. There's also the thought of, well, this game was close because of maybe some errors in judgment that Kirby Smart made, or maybe just errors on the field that Georgia made, and maybe it shows a level of vulnerability for the Dogs that some people didn't quite expect. Which of those two drastically different opinions do you find yourself gravitating more towards based on what you saw for Georgia against Notre Dame?
Oh, the former, absolutely. Georgia had a tough game. They learned something about themselves. It was an absolute knockdown. First of all, Notre Dame was significantly better than people thought they were. That's number one. You could watch it. You could watch that game in the first half and go, you know what, these guys are quicker than we were led to believe. And they stopped the run better than we were led to believe. And so I think the game went pretty much the way that Kirby Smart and his staff thought it would. If you don't give up the muff punt and give them 7 points, then that game looks a lot different. So it's way too early to be talking about vulnerabilities. I think you get a win like that, you celebrate it and move on.
How about the more pointed criticism? Kirby Smart himself even addressed this a little bit on Tuesday, the idea that he was too conservative in this game, and maybe as a theme of his coaching strategy, been too conservative, not going for the touchdown late, maybe trying to hold on to the lead as opposed to what some people would say, which is kind of step on the throat of an opponent and be more aggressive as the game gets later. What do you think about that in general and the notion that that may be holding Georgia back a bit?
Well, it is a fair criticism, or it is fair to raise the issue should Kirby Smart have gone for it when he had to. In other words, I have coaches who tell me, "Hey, let's win the game right here. Okay, let's go. We've got a chance to win it. There's an element of risk involved. let's win the game right here. And I totally understand that. But I also knew, I've seen Kirby Smart thinking come into play. He said, hey, they're probably going to get two possessions. We need to make it so they have to score two touchdowns to beat us, not a touchdown and a field goal. My belief at the time was that he should have gone for it, and it is fair to question whether or not they're being aggressive enough. But you know what? In that atmosphere, you're just trying to win. And so I understood, but I also I do believe the criticism, I'm not saying it's valid in all cases, but it's fair to raise the point.
So now we've seen Georgia play four times, twice against Power 5 FBS teams, twice against lesser competition. Do you feel like that you know something different about Georgia than maybe what you would have thought in the preseason? Has your opinion for the either the better or for the worse changed about Georgia a third of the way through the regular season at all now?
The defense is better than I thought it was going to be, and they're getting better. Offensively, they're doing exactly what I think we all thought they were going to do. I don't hear a lot of people talk. I thought Jake Fromm was magnificent on Saturday night. I thought he made throw after throw in clutch situations. Some of those back shoulder throws, they're just guys in college football who won't make them. So, you know, we've come to take Jake Fromm for granted, but I thought he was great the other night. But Georgia, and I said this, guys, Georgia is, to me, one of the most complete football teams in all of college football. Everybody's got some weaknesses, and Georgia certainly has theirs. But when you look at, you know, great offensive line, great deep running backs, great quarterback, receivers that are only going to get better each and every game, and a defense that is getting better, Georgia, I think Georgia's a really good football team.
Yeah, let me follow up on that for a minute if you don't mind, because, you know, when I think of it, I have Georgia in a group of six, what I think of as, like, legitimate national championship contenders. Alabama, Clemson, I'll put LSU in there. I'll put Ohio State and Oklahoma. Now, from Alabama, we've seen that they have struggled running the football just a little bit. Clemson, for whatever reason, just hasn't really quite found its offense yet. Trevor Lawrence has probably not played quite as well as I would have expected him to. LSU, I mean, I've heard from LSU fans on this. They're concerned about their defense. They're scoring points all over the place, and they're not stopping people, which is a pretty interesting flip of the script from what we've used to expect from LSU. And then Ohio State and Oklahoma, they really haven't played what I would think of as a, you know, truly interesting opponent yet. They haven't really played a big game yet, so we'll learn more about them, you know, kind of later on. I guess, you know, you said that you look at Georgia as being a complete team right now, among the most complete teams. How would you compare them to maybe some of those other elite teams, or our view of what the elite teams are? How would you compare Georgia to some of those other teams right now?
I think they're on the same level. I think they're on that level that you talk about, and it's all going to, you know, if they met in the playoffs, it would all come down to, you know, one a handful of plays. And so I think all those schools that you just mentioned are pretty much on the same level. The thing I like about Georgia is the offensive line and the ability to run the football when they want to run the football. The question I have about LSU, the question I have about Alabama, the question I have about teams like Auburn is that can they run the ball when they want to, when they've either got to run the four-minute drill to win a game or run the four-minute drill to close out a game? Georgia is a team that can do that, and I'm not sure about some of these other teams.
Let's talk about, to finish up our conversation here, where Georgia goes next Saturday, and that's Tennessee. And I guess I'm curious of your thoughts on this. You know, we have a tendency to accelerate conversations, you know, to make it seem like it's the end of the world when maybe it's something less than that. Are things as bad at Tennessee right now as they look? Is Jeremy Pruitt in trouble? Is Philip Fulmer? I mean, what is going on there, and is this as bad as it appears from a couple hundred miles away?
Well, let's start at the top. Tennessee's a bad football team, okay? Now, how bad the situation is another matter altogether. You got guys leaving the program. That's never a good sign. And they just got just absolutely trounced last week by Florida. But having said that, I do not see a situation where they're going to do anything in the middle of the season. I think this is something that Tennessee is, I said this the other night to a group, that Tennessee's going to have to just sort of gut it out and do the best they can and then sit down and take a serious evaluation at the end of the year. Brandon, the thing for Tennessee is pretty simple. Their quarterback, Jared Garantano, there are plays. Jim Chaney is drawing up plays to be made, and Garantano's not making the plays. And when your quarterback's not making plays, it's usually not very pretty.
Do you think, and you know this guy as probably as well as anybody we could ask this question to, we joke sometimes that Philip Fulmer is trying to retake this job over. Do you think Fulmer wants to be the Tennessee coach again?
No. Look, Philip Fulmer has gotten a second chance to write the ending to his Hall of Fame career, okay? He was shoved out the door unceremoniously. That's not the way he wanted it to end. Now he's got a chance to fix this. Well, him taking over as coach is not going to fix this by any stretch of the imagination. Now, the caveat that I would give you there on that, Brandon, is if it becomes a situation where the players absolutely quit listening and they shut it down and they quit, okay? If Philip Fulmer determines that they quit, then maybe he's got to make a move. But the move is not him taking over the team. That's not the move.
It'll certainly be very interesting to see how that plays out, Tony. Before we let you go, remind us where we can find your written work and kind of all the stuff you got going on this fall.
Well, the written word is on tmgcollegesports.com. That's part of the Maven group that's been taken over by Sports Illustrated, and it's me and three of my old newspaper buddies. We went into business together, so all of my written stuff is there. I do stuff for 680 The Fan in Atlanta a couple of days a week, and, of course, the mothership is the SEC Network, and I'm there on and off during the course of the week and sit in for Mr. Feinbaum every now and then. So,
well, Tony, it is always a great pleasure for us to get a chance to talk college football with you. You've got great insight on the sport. We appreciate you sharing some of that with us here today, and we'll look forward to speaking to you here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon there as well.
Okay, Brandon, take care.
Really good stuff there from Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football. You can see him on the SEC Network. You can read him, as he said, TMG College Sports, and I hope that you will check that out. Okay, let me now shift our attention back fully to the Georgia Bulldogs here, although I think it is interesting to hear Tony share some thoughts on Tennessee, and you hear him emphatically say no, that he does not believe Philip Fulmer wants to be the head coach at Tennessee again. And I guess when you watch all this play out, I do believe that Fulmer's a careerist. I believe that you know, he's always playing a personal PR game for himself. And right now, Fulmer does have a little bit of popularity there in Tennessee. He's not really viewed as being part of the problem right now. The moment you put that coach's play card in your hand, all of a sudden, the moment you inherit the mess that's on the field, right now he can position himself as the savior to fix what's broken and blame all of this on Jeremy Pruitt if he wants to. And, you know, for a guy that's always looking to advance his career, seemingly always looking to put himself in the best possible position to be viewed as the good guy in a situation, you know, remaining athletic director, not veering back in the direction of being coach, would certainly make some sense for Fulmer there. But we'll talk more about Pruitt here in a moment. I just think that one of the issues that he's going to have is that he's just not nearly as good at the PR game. You know, he says some of the wrong stuff. I think he kind of bristles at the media from time to time. I don't know that he has a media ally in Knoxville right now. There's probably a group of reporters looking to get their pound of flesh on him, and that can be a problem. And for Pruitt moving forward, given the fact that he's not providing much evidence of support with his on-field work, not having an ally off the field is not necessarily a great place to be. This could be a very, very ugly situation in Knoxville because the results on the field don't provide you much reason for hope. But Georgia's got its own issues to think about. Some of those involve injuries. Let's do that now as part of our Ortho Atlanta injury report. Let me give you a couple of updates here. I talked before about Georgia having to play on Saturday without both of its starting cornerbacks, at least for a large portion of the game. You've also got the offensive line deal when it comes to Solomon Kinley. The problem with a bye week like this is, you know, there's really no reason to rush anybody back on the practice field. So for the most part, we are kind of, you know, frozen storylines involving all these injuries right now. But Kirby Smart did provide an update on those guys, as well as a defensive lineman who's kind of been through it a little bit here too. So as a part of our Ortho Atlanta injury report, here is Kirby Smart on that.
Eric was not able to go today. We think he's going to be fine, but he was a little sore. He jogged yesterday and he ran today, but he wasn't able to practice. Tyson is working out, training, running, but not able to practice. Solomon didn't practice today, and he'll be day-to-day. We think he'll be fine, but he wasn't able to go today.
And David Marsh?
Yeah, David's had his foot injuries bothered him all year. I mean, he's gone. He's played. I think he played 10, 11 snaps the other game, but it continuously bothers him. So we're trying to help him out with that and relieve him a little bit this week and get him back next week.
Yeah, you hate that for David Marshall. I mean, he's really been battling this thing for seemingly a long time. And as I said before, given the fact that Georgia doesn't play a game on Saturday, no reason to rush back Stokes, no reason to rush back Campbell, the same thing for Solomon Kinley. I'm wondering, though, if we start hearing differing reports on them as you get ready for Tennessee next week. Obviously, you know, Campbell had been playing really well before he went out with injury. You certainly hope for better news on him soon, much the same way with Stokes. Those two guys, the tandem they have formed at the cornerback position, that's something that Georgia needs. Probably didn't play, you know, badly without those guys this past Saturday. But for the most important games Georgia plays this season, you want that Campbell of Stokes, that combo of Campbell and Stokes to be out there and be able to do that. One more injury update as part of our Ortho Atlanta injury report. The current status of Kyaris Jackson, who's now been out for a little while. Kirby also offered a bit of an update on him, too. Here's Kirby on that.
No, he's doing everything. I mean, he did everything today. He's been practicing every day doing everything. He just has a club on. So, I mean, he practiced every rep today. He just has a big club on. So he does everything that we ask him to do. He stays in shape, catches punts. He caught balls today, just catching them with one hand in a club.
So that's all part of our Ortho Atlanta injury report. Kyaris Jackson, David Marshall, Solomon Kinley, Eric Stokes, Tyson Campbell. You can find out more on their status as well by checking out the Ortho Atlanta injury report at dognation.com. And speaking of Ortho Atlanta, they've got 14 locations throughout Metro Atlanta. They provide orthopedic and sports medicine care for the whole family, including seniors and kids. They've also got 39 physicians and over 450 employees dedicated to patient care throughout the metro area. They provide in-house physical therapy, MRI imaging, outpatient surgery, after-hours orthopedic care. I'm talking about for little leaguers, weekend warriors, pros, collegiate athletes, everything in between. It's been said before that a good orthopedist can get you back in the game, but a great one can get you back your quality of life. That's why Dog Nation recommends Ortho Atlanta, because they can get you not just back in the game, but back feeling good and enjoying a very high quality of life. Again, you can find them online at orthoatlanta.com. That website, once again, is orthoatlanta.com.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So speaking of Jeremy Pruitt, as we roll through our SEC Through here, you know, he said something yesterday that I think is the perfect example of what is going to be hard for him as more critics mount. Pruitt's just not good at using the media. He's not a great speaker. He's kind of a strained speaker, and you know, working for Nick Saban, he wasn't asked to speak to reporters. He did talk to reporters sometimes at Georgia, and frankly, you know, I'm not one of these guys that cares a whole lot about that one way or another. You can talk to reporters, you don't. You're not. I'm not one of these guys that's going to do a whole bunch of complaining about that. But when you don't do it, and then you need an ally, someone to help be a mouthpiece for you, you're just not fine-tuned enough to go out there and cultivate those kinds of relationships. So yesterday, Pruitt, you know, in talking about a press conference, said that he thinks his current Tennessee team is 100 times better than it was a year ago. Now, I'm sure that he thought that he was sending a message that was going to be like, hey, I'm coaching these guys up, and y'all may not see the results on the field, but trust me, behind the scenes, this team's getting better. But that's not the way that it was received by a lot of the ears who heard it, nor was that the way it was kind of reported by some of the people who were in the room to kind of transcribe, you know, these kinds of quotes. It kind of ends up feeling a little bit like a Butch Jones champion of life type moment, or a five-star heart times, you know, type moment. Tennessee fans don't want to hear that a team that's getting pummeled by Florida for like the 13th time in 14 years, whatever the overall numbers are, that team's 100 times better than it was a year ago. Because what does that say about the current status of the program if things were that bad a year ago? I mean, it's just not a very good PR statement. It's the kind of thing that Pruitt is just not that good at. So results on the field for Tennessee have to be better, but in terms of Pruitt being able to eventually save his job, coming up with a story, a sales pitch for why he's the right guy for the job, frankly, I'm just not quite so sure that Jeremy Pruitt's going to be able to do that. Now, I told you yesterday there were a couple of Tennessee transfers, and there had been rumors of more coming, and one of the names I'd heard about did, I guess, go ahead and go through with this. It's Will Ignott, a former four-star linebacker, a guy that started the first couple games for the Vols this season. So this is a bigger loss for Tennessee. Now, I guess apparently somehow, some way, Ignott had kind of fallen on hard times with the Tennessee program, because I don't believe he traveled with the team on the 70-man roster to Florida this past week. So I guess somehow he'd gotten himself in Jeremy Pruitt's doghouse. But this was a former starter and one of the better recruits that Pruitt's brought in thus far. but apparently making the decision to transfer. So this is the kind of thing that happens when you when you have a program that's not doing well. People are going to start shopping around looking for other opportunities, and coaches, I guess, are going to try to shorten up their bench just a little bit. So keep your eye on that, as Tennessee apparently losing another player to the transfer. Speaking of transfer rumors, things along those lines, we talked yesterday about a weird rumor that had come up out of Gainesville about Brenton Cox's status, some people believing that the Florida Gators are about to get some good news on that. Dan Mullen spoke yesterday as a part of the weekly SEC teleconference and said he'd heard nothing on this, that as of right now, the status on Brenton Cox is exactly the way that it was, which is pretty much what we assumed had been the case, that, you know, we didn't really know why the rumor had popped up, but we said yesterday we didn't think this was likely to be true the way that some Florida fans wanted it to, and apparently Dan Mullen, at least for now, is confirming that. They really haven't heard anything from the NCAA on this one way or another, which, if you know the totality of the NCAA's history when it comes to decisions like that, is not that big of a surprise. Speaking of embattled coaches, South Carolina Athletic Director Ray Tanner has spoken up and spoken out on the status of Will Muschamp, and what he's offering in the way of Muschamp right now is a pretty full-throated defense. So Tanner coming to Muschamp's aid here, defending him now, saying that he believed in him when he was hired. He still believes in Muschamp as the head coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks. I have said before that the best overall strategy, I believe, if you're South Carolina, given the success that Clemson's enjoying, that's your biggest rival, given the success that Georgia's enjoying, believe it or not, that may be South Carolina's second biggest rival. Given the success of your two big rivals right now, you may just be better off waiting that out. I've made my case a million times at some of the recruiting wins the Muschamp has gotten. The average coach would not be able to get, and maybe he's the kind of coach you want to be patient with. But you got to have performances better than what happened for South Carolina last week at Missouri. It's one thing not to be competitive with Clemson. It's one thing not to be competitive with Georgia. But when you're not competitive with that next tier of SECE school, that's the kind of thing that's going to cause a problem for some South Carolina fans. They are very impatient. You can go and look at yourself on any kind of message board. You can see an example of that being true. So we shall see where all this goes. But for now, the dreaded vote of confidence from Ray Tanner, it has been extended to Will Muschamp. We'll make that your SEC through. And as we do, I'll remind you about my friends at Callaway Resort and Gardens and a really cool thing they have going on for you right now. How about the brand new Fall Adventure Pass? Now, this is a great weekend to get away to Callaway Resort and Gardens because it's a bye week for Georgia. The fall weather is going to be beautiful. That's my understanding anyway. And really, any time this time of year is a great time to be at Callaway Resort and Gardens. And this is a great deal to take advantage of that. You can maximize both the fun and the savings. Pass includes bike rental, treetop adventure, tennis time, and shore fishing. The price couldn't be better. It's just $40 plus tax and fees. To learn more, you can go to CallawayGardens.com, or you can purchase at the Callaway Information Center or at the Treetop Adventure Course. So check that out. Great, great savings. CallawayGardens.com for a whole lot more on that. As promised, I want to kind of get in here and do a little recruiting talk for a couple of minutes. Let me start with this. James Williams is a 2021 prospect of great interest here, a five-star safety. He's one of those guys that maybe, are we having audio problems right now? Yeah, it certainly seems like that. I've been noticing that for a while. I hope that's not been going on the entire time. So I apologize if we are if we're having those audio issues. But nonetheless, James Williams is a 2021 safety, five-star, one of those guys that Jeff Centel has reported that was not at Georgia on Saturday, although there was some chance that he might be. But Williams has come out, and he has named his finalists. He has put Georgia among his group of finalists. He's got a top five that includes Clemson, Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, and Miami. So when you think about the big-time, big-name prospects of the class of 2021, there are few bigger than James Williams. You know, there are a few versions of various guys at various positions each and every year that are just maybe a little bit more special from a skill set standpoint than the typical guy. Williams is certainly the version of that when it comes to safeties at 2021. So you know, keep your eye on this young man. George's already gotten some commits from defensive backs for the class of 2021, but keep your eye on Williams as being one of the big ones there, and many of you are already very well aware of who that is. And he has now officially included Georgia along with a couple of other SEC teams into his top five. This is going to be one to watch. Now, the 2020 version of what James Williams is as a safety, maybe Noah Sewell as a linebacker. One of those guys that is just unique for his position, special for what he brings to the table. In Sewell's case, it's the combination of his size. He's almost big enough to be a defensive lineman with his speed. He essentially runs with anybody in the country. Georgia did get a chance to host him this past weekend for the game against Notre Dame. And apparently things with Georgia and Sewell are going really, really well. Let me give you an update on what Jeff Sintel has said about that. Here is Jeff Sintel on Noah Sewell. This is from yesterday's Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. Take a listen to that.
I would probably dismiss as much as I can any notions or any fears that people have that the Noah Sewell decision will be decided by location. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's an issue for Noah at all. He has always struck me from when I first started talking to him and his father, Gabriel Sewell Sr., he is a explorer. He's a guy that wants to set the curve. He doesn't want to be a guy that kind of follows what his brother did or go find his brother. If you look at all the Sewell brothers, one was at Oregon, one's at Nevada, one's at Utah. They kind of went their own separate ways. I get the feeling that Georgia, where it stands with Noah Sewell, I can't imagine them trying to launch the ball out of the park or doing any better right now with Noah Sewell than they currently are.
So listen, I mean, that's a pretty bold statement there from Jeff Sintel. Knocking the ball out of the park when it comes to the recruitment of Sewell, can't imagine things going any better than they are. You know, I've said before that, you know, I feel like it's just a really tough pull to go into Orem, Utah, for a guy whose gravitational pull, seemingly with the rest of his family, has kind of always been West Coast, Pacific time zone type teams. To think that Georgia could kind of get in on that recruitment the way that they are, I've always felt like that was a very difficult challenge. But Jeff does not throw words around lightly. For him to say that the recruitment could not be going better than it is right now, boy, that's a pretty strong statement there and a pretty good testament of maybe how well Georgia's doing with Sewell. Now, is this recruitment over? Probably far from it. But has Georgia put themselves in a pretty good position? Based on what Jeff Sintel said on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger yesterday, it sounds like that is indeed the case. All right, we will get ready to wrap up here today, and hopefully you've been able to hear. It sounds like we had a little bit of a microphone issue there. Hopefully that hasn't been too significant. But nonetheless, let me wrap up by doing the way we always do. Gator hater updater. We're a big believer that a good Georgia fan is supposed to be a Gator hater. And it's good news, the fact that Georgia has been on top in this rivalry for as long as it has. Now been 1,062 days. 1,062 days. That's how long it's been since Florida has beaten Georgia. That's good news. Part of our Gator Hater Updater. A couple programming notes here. Normally on Thursdays, we have the Marlowe's matchup. No Marlowe's matchup for us tonight. We'll be back again next Thursday at our normal time, looking ahead to the game against Tennessee. We will have Dog Nation Daily, of course, presented by Kroger here tomorrow. We'll have an R.S. Andrews Go With The Flow on the site there tomorrow as well. So plenty of video content coming. And, as I said, we'll see you tomorrow as well, right here on Dog Nation Daily.